It's Current State on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. In the era of Obamacare, we often hear of health care delivery. That refers to the various ways patients are served by health professionals. For example, primary care from a general practitioner, secondary care at a hospital, urgent care, and so on. Many of the top policymakers and administrators in Michigan's healthcare system gathered yesterday here in East Lansing. They discussed a key issue involving all of us, the transformation of this vast delivery system in order to accommodate considerable costs and millions of newly insured Americans. Yesterday, I sat down with two key participants in the annual Michigan Health Policy Forum. First, Mr. Michael Levitt, the co-chair of the State Healthcare Cost Containment Commission, the former director of the U.S. Health and Human Services Administration under President George W. Bush, and the former governor of Utah. We were joined by the director of the Michigan Department of Community Health, James Haveman. I began by asking about a recent Cost Containment Commission report. It's called Cracking the Code on Healthcare Costs. It states the goal is, quoting now, to replace the nation's reliance on fragmented fee-for-service care with comprehensive coordinated care using payment models that hold organizations accountable for cost control and quality gains, unquote. I asked Governor Levitt how much of a consensus there is over coordinated care as a goal.
I don't think we can say there's a clear consensus. I think policymakers see the value of it, but the transition in the way we pay and who takes risk both require substantial changes. And there's a resistance to the change, and in some respects, we're not fully ready for it. But in terms of direction, I think there's a growing view that in order to bend the cost curve to give people better care at lower costs, we have to integrate the care better, and we have to change the system in a way that will produce that.
Tell us a little bit more about the nature of this resistance, though. Where is it coming from? What's it about?
Well, if you run a hospital or a doctor's clinic, you've been paid one way forever. You get paid on what's known as a fee-for-service basis. It's a piecemeal, and people have become very comfortable with it. Once you begin to say, we're going to pay you differently, we're going to require that you make some decisions and set some priorities, those are hard decisions. And it just takes time for people to understand how to do it. Now, there are segments of the population where that's been done well. I think here in Michigan, the Medicaid system is, for the most part, paid for on a capitated basis. That is to say, they give a healthcare provider or integrator a lump sum of money, and then their job is to keep people healthy and to keep them happy. And if they are able to do that for less money, then they benefit. In my mind, that's a very enlightened way to go. And so in the entire Medicaid population here in Michigan, that's begun to move forward. But it's not true across the board.
Director Haveman, back in March on this program, Andy Hetzel, who's a spokesman for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, told our listeners that his organization has, in recent years, been moving away from the fee-for-service model toward better coordinated care with a number of what he called progressive hospitals across Michigan. How far down this road are we right now in Michigan, and how much further do we have to go?
Well, as Governor Levitt said, way back in 1997, we moved over 900,000 people from fee-for-service to more of a managed care model, which is per member per month, which is a shared risk. That has continued, and as you know, with the Healthy Michigan Plan, which we unfolded in this state on April 1, it is very much that it's focused on outcome. It's focused on engagement of the consumer in their own care. It's focusing on chronic illness. I mean, we've talked before, Mark, that 77% of the healthcare costs in this state are related to chronic illness. Much of that's preventable, and the way you get a hold of that is a more organized approach to healthcare. And in Governor Levitt's report on doubling down on healthcare cost containment, it really speaks to accountable care, integrated care organizations, more of a regional approach, to more of a capitated system, more of shared risk, more of the big thing we're going to be seeing in the years ahead is self-management, is consumer engagement in their own wellness. And And this is something that we support and embrace.
Could I make the point that this is a bit more complicated than to simply say the insurance companies are now assuming or receiving a lump sum of money? Many of the insurance companies are receiving a lump sum of money in order to manage this population, but they're still paying the hospitals and doctors on a fee-for-service basis. So the payer of the state or the employer might be putting it out, but in many cases, the decision makers are the insurers as opposed to the care providers. And ultimately, to have coordinated care, you have to put both the care provider and the insurance company in essentially the same boat.
Well, as you pointed out, Governor Leavitt, hospitals are having to let go of an existing profitable model. What about that other side of the equation? Is there a shortage of insurers that are slow to embark on this transformation?
Insurers are more rapidly embracing it. In fact, they've been anxious to promote it for years. The shortage is in hospitals and clinics and others who are prepared to begin to change their model.
Before we get into some of the specific recommendations of the Cost Containment Commission's report, let's listen to a little of what Andy Hetzel had to say about how Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, for one, claims to be helping to drive this transformation in terms of better coordinated care. Here's his example.
For instance, we all know the circumstance of going into the doctor's office and having a test done, and then being admitted to the hospital, and once we get there, having the same test done at the hospital. By enabling doctors and hospitals to share information better, creating all patient registries, for example, we can eliminate the need to do that second test and save the money and treat the patient in the hospital system much more efficiently. And by eliminating that cost and sharing the savings back to the hospital, what Blue Cross is trying to do is to enable more efficient care, higher quality of care, savings, and a different form of reimbursement that really gives these hospitals the infrastructure funding they need to make these changes.
This gets to technology infrastructure. How big a piece is that in this larger transformation?
Well, Jim, I would say that it is a significant piece, but it's not the only piece. Right. To a large extent, I mean, someone once said to me, do you know what the most expensive piece of equipment is in a hospital? And I was thinking MRI or something, and they said, no, it's a ballpoint pen in the hand of a doctor. they make decisions on care that drive costs or that save cost. And right now, they are incentivized to have more care, as are, frankly, hospitals, because that test that was just spoken of, that was done twice, the hospital is part of their revenue model. It's, as they say, one man's waste is another man's living. And that's the dilemma, is getting people integrated so that they both have the same incentives, and it's keeping the patient healthy.
I was talking to a hospital administrator the other day, and he's saying that he's going through a whole transition in his own way of thinking as a hospital administrator, because in the past, hospital administrators would be kind of rewarded for keeping the hospital beds full. Now, with all the transformation that's going on in healthcare through the Affordable Care Act and almost a natural evolution of a lot of new ideas, they're going to get being paid for keeping hospital beds empty. So the future, I think the governor's report is really focused, and what we're doing here in Michigan is the primary healthcare consumer relationship, this whole, you're hearing more about navigators, the experience of care, population health, how does public health and Medicaid and how does this all come together where you have positive outcomes for people in their own wellness? Many times people talk about medical homes. Lately, I've been kind of using the theme, Governor, that the community you live in is your medical home. It means to do, are there bike paths? Are there healthy alternatives? Are there healthy places for kids to play? Are there?
What do you make of that, Governor Leavitt?
I absolutely believe it's true. If you were to look at the history of healthcare in our country and start looking at the place where we really started to make progress in, say, in mortality, it was where we began to pay attention to environmental factors, clean water, clean air, exercise, physical education. All of those things contributed to a dramatic increase in lifespan. And they will also contribute to short lifespan if we don't pay attention to them.
Our guest today on Current State, Governor Michael Leavitt and Director James Haveman of the Michigan Department of Community Health. We are talking about cost containment in health care. Governor Leavitt, let's touch on a few of your commission's specific recommendations, which you're addressing here at the East Lansing Conference. There are seven overall. The first one gets back to what we were just talking about. Create an alliance of stakeholders to transform the healthcare system. I take it reform of this magnitude may be impossible without such an alliance.
This requires enormous collaborative IQ. No individual person, organization, or even government can solve this. This requires a community collaborating, and that means you have to have conveners, someone who can bring the community together. It means you obviously have to have committed leaders who will continue to drive it forward when it gets hard. It means that you have to have all the right people at the table. This is serious change, and it requires not just change in laws, it requires changes in behavior.
And Director Haveman, how would you say we're doing on this front in Michigan?
Well, we just completed a process called the Blueprint for Health Innovation as part of a federal initiative on state innovation models, and this now at the federal government to review to do some test regions, and it did that exactly. For a year, we just spent time talking to stakeholders, consumers, hospital people, insurance companies, had a variety of hearings around the state, and really came up with, and it's amazing, many of the recommendations that we sent on to the federal government, CMS within HHS, were very similar to what the governor recommended in his report. And so that's why I'm excited about him being here today, because one of the follow-ups presentation to his presentation will be about the blueprint for the future.
Another recommendation, define and collect data to create a profile of healthcare in the state. This sounds daunting, candidly.
Well, until you can measure it, you can't make progress on it. And it does require some authoritative group to establish a baseline and say, this is where we start. And here's how we'll make progress. And you have to break it down into pieces. It sounds as though that's a lot of what Michigan has been doing and making good progress. And the more I learn about what Michigan's doing, the more encouraged I am that this is, in fact, a very good example of the kinds of things I wish other states were doing.
James Haveman, comment on that, if you would. How are we doing on the data front here in Michigan?
And data analytics are going to drive the future here with the medical files which physicians are using, with the data systems that are going on a regional basis, with these hubs to transfer data. We have a data warehouse at the state of Michigan where we can query information of all our claims data. I can tell you now where the high utilizers are, where our hot spots are, where we can move programs to. This wasn't available, Mark, 15 years ago, 12 years ago. This is the new trend. This is an exciting part of why the governor and I see that there's hope, because we're going to have the data to make decisions on, and historically it wasn't made on data.
In very practical ways, this can be even predictive. When airlines deal with airplanes, they're able, through predictive analytics, to determine when a part needs to be replaced. It's a preventative maintenance at that point. We're now getting good enough at this that we're able to determine when people are about to have incidents in their life based on their behaviors, based on various things that have occurred. And having that kind of information not only saves money, it saves lives.
James Haveman, as we said, there are seven key recommendations in this report. Do you agree with all of them, or are there any that you feel are wide of the mark or significantly less relevant or important than others?
I told the governor before we went on the air that I had read the report, and I really appreciated it. I thought they really captured in an understandable way a roadmap that people can really focus in on their recommendations. I think we somewhat parallel, somewhat separate for what he has done, have really adopted many of those recommendations and where we're going forward in this day.
Recommendation number three, establish statewide baselines for goals for health care spending, quality, and other measures as appropriate. Tell us more about that, Governor.
As I said just a bit earlier, if you can't measure it, it's hard to make progress. You get progress on what you inspect, not what you expect. And so having a baseline to say, this is where we are today, and tomorrow we want to be at this place. We want to be able to have with some clear, measurable goals. And this requires leadership. It requires, I noted that Governor Snyder, as part of the agenda that he put forward in reinventing Michigan, was reinventing the healthcare system. Part of that is defining the deficiencies and setting clear goals on how to improve it.
Your report stresses the role of the states in this transformation. How is it individual states have so much leverage on this front?
I think you have struck at what the major point of this report is. States have more capacity to make a difference than you think. In fact, when you begin to look at the different ways in which states can impact healthcare, in many ways, it's substantially greater than the federal government, though all of the attention is paid to Congress. For example, the state has Medicaid. One of the largest payers in the state is Medicaid. When Medicaid puts the strength of its wallet behind change, it drives it. State employees, likely the largest employer in the state. You took the state's universities in there, and schools and cities and counties, and if they were to collaboratively come together to say, we're going to begin to drive payment change, it would occur. On top of just the impact of the wallet, being able to, the delivery system, there are certain coverage mandates that some states have that are illogical. Malpractice and tort reform is another area that the states control. The scope of practice, who can do what? Many states restrict the ability of people who are not doctors to do things that they can do quite well under the supervision of a doctor, much less expensively. All of those are the kinds of things that states control that Congress doesn't. Plus, there's an atmosphere of collaboration that can occur in a state because you're dealing with people who actually do things, not just people who talk about things.
James Haveman, do you feel as empowered as Mr. Leavitt suggests you should feel?
I've always been a state rights person, and we're a laboratory of innovation. In fact, it's really been fun for me to get together with some of my colleagues from Arkansas and Ohio and some of the other states who are thinking through similar things but have a different twist on them, and we can do some lessons learned together. But I think the states, and I think the governor's right, and that's why with a Healthy Michigan plan, you know, there are many innovations, you know, and we needed a waiver to kick it off, as you know. We got another waiver coming up after 48 months. A person can choose to go to the exchange or stay on the plan with some increased premium. I mean, we're looking at some new ways of delivering health care to the adults, which is really focused on accountability for their own behavior. In fact, if you don't work on your wellness incentives with your health professional, you're not going to get a deduction in your premium, and you're going to be held accountable for it. And I think that's what's going to start changing the cost curve in this day.
Governor Leavitt, the wording of your commission's report, cracking the code, suggests a breakthrough. Is that reading too much into it, or do you consider what you found a breakthrough?
I feel more optimistic right now about the U.S. health system actually devising an American, uniquely American way to deal with health care than I have in 10 years. It has very little to do with the Affordable Care Act. I think it has to do with the fact that states and employers are beginning to feel very strong economic pressures to make changes. And we're starting to see very difficult things being undertaken. And it will take difficult change in order to solve this problem.
I said in this program before, about 12 years ago, I gave a speech where with the business people where 95% of the businessmen in the room thought they had no impact on health care costs in their companies. Today, about 6 months ago, I gave the same speech. 99% of them now believe that they can do something about the health care costs with benchmarking and a whole lot of other expectations. And I agree with the governor. I think we're probably in a time where a lot of the legacy thinking, there's a lot of innovation going on. And, you know, you look at Ascension and Trinity Systems coming together with a new model that is more focused on patient care and high touch. You've got mergers of hospitals going on in the state. I think we're going to see this around the country. And I think we got to keep some competition going, and I think we'll have that. But I bet you within this state, within 5-6 years, we'll have maybe 5 large health systems basically offering the health care services to the citizens of the state.
And nationally, we're actually starting to see the cost curve bend. Now, there's lots of folks who'd like to take credit for that. But the reality is, it's the composite of millions of individual decisions being driven by financial requirement to survive. There is an economic imperative to this that if the United States wants to stay competitive in the world, we have to do this better. We cannot allow 20-25% of our entire gross domestic product to go to health care. That means that education's being shortchanged. It means that research and development's being shortchanged. It means our infrastructure's going without. We have to do this better. We spend more than twice as much as the average developed nation on health care.
We've been talking mostly about the state dynamic here, but I've got to ask you about Sylvia Matthews-Burwell. She appears to be en route to appointment to your former job as director of HHS. Are you following this closely enough to comment on Ms. Burwell?
I am following her appointment and her confirmation closely. I don't know her. I hear very complimentary things being said by both Republicans and Democrats. She has a budget background. I think she's coming out of the Office of Management and Budget, which is a highly disciplined place. She has a big job. People have asked if I have advice for her, and I have just suggested that while the Affordable Care Act is a very important part of that job, there's a lot of things that happen in that department that she'll have to be paying attention to, and it'd be in her interest to look after all of them, not just one.
James Haven, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about community mental health centers across the state and their funding concerns. Virtually all of them are worried that there won't be enough new Healthy Michigan dollars coming in to offset the loss of money from the state's general fund. Where does that stand?
There's more money in the budget in 2014 than there was in the original 2014 budget for community mental health. Most community mental health boards in the state have their consumers who make less than 138% of poverty. All of those are eligible for the Healthy Michigan Plan. Many of them already were on Medicaid because they were disabled and were part of the waiver program. We're watching it closely. We put more money out to the community mental health boards in April than we did in March, and we're monitoring this closely. A few have raised some concerns, but part of those have to do with counties that had shifted county responsibility to the community mental health boards and not and away from the person who it should be going to. And I think it'll sort itself out over the next months, and I think we'll be going into next fiscal year in a robust way.
I think you're probably referring to a $12 million supplemental that went to help with this recently. We spoke with Tom Watkins, president of the Detroit Wayne County CMH Authority, and he told us he had to cut $20 million alone just from his budget. That's just for Wayne County. Certainly $12 million isn't going to go anywhere near covering the kinds of cuts. If many other counties have to make comparable cuts, it's not going to do an awful lot.
Well, Wayne County is unique because, as you know, Detroit Wayne just became an authority, and they split from the county of Wayne, but some of the county of Wayne responsibilities went with the authority and should have stayed with the county of Wayne. And I think Tom's going to have to work that out with the county executive.
I know you rely more on Medicaid expansion here to cover some of these costs, but there are crucial programs in mental health in particular that are not covered by Medicaid, correct?
Some, but there's some general fund dollars out there yet. You know, they're not all gone, and folks are going to have to learn. We're moving to an arena that is more focused on person care and less on administration. I mean, we have to cut out some administrative costs, and we have to look at programs that are working and what's not working. And there were many things in some of the community mental health boards over the state that I think it's good that they're just stepping back and saying, okay, is this a program that we want to continue, or is this somebody else's responsibility? We're moving to an integration. The whole carve-out of mental health from physical health, we are integrating health so fast in this country, we can hardly keep up with the coding and the policies. And the community mental health boards that understand that are doing just fine. And we're getting a few complaints, but it isn't statewide.
If the Healthy Michigan dollars turn out not to be enough, can the state make up the difference? Will the state make up the difference?
The fact that we're at 237,000 people today after 5 weeks of introducing a Healthy Michigan Plan program, where most of those who are part of the Community Mental Health Board are eligible for, if they currently don't have Medicaid, I assure you there'll be plenty of dollars to serve the people in this state.
You can guarantee that?
Sure. Yeah. Very confident.
Where's the legislature on that?
Legislature is moving ahead to finalize our 2015 budget at this time. And there's no rumblings within the legislature to add additional dollars in the community mental health line.
Michigan Department of Community Health Director James Haveman there. We were also joined by Governor Michael Leavitt. Both participated in yesterday's Michigan Health Policy Forum in East Lansing.